97.5, The Fanatic.
Pleasant Monday evening to you and yours. Hope you're staying safe and happy and healthy. Thanks for hanging out with us here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zuli in for Devon Gibbons as we take you in the crease until midnight for a 5-4 thrilling Flyers overtime win over the New York Rangers. Nat Marlowe producing the show. You'll hear from him in just a little bit as he is in my normal spot. Devon Gibbons will be back tomorrow for a much-deserved day off for Devon. We take you until midnight. Got a lot to discuss about this game and Philadelphia sports landscape as a whole, and we only have an hour and 45 minutes to do it, so let us jump right into things. Guys, I got to be honest. Prior to the show, Jason Mertedis was doing the Fanatic Flyers weekly show, as he does once per week. It was a great show, as always. I was producing that show, and Jason asked me, do you believe that the Flyers still have it in them to turn things around and make a playoff run? And I had to pause for just a second. And the reason that I had to pause for just a second was because of the fact that even in wins, like tonight, I have a lot of concerns. And then eventually, my answer to Jason was yes. Under the assumption that we temper expectations and we don't think about some kind of return to prominence, meaning that they're going to be the one seed again like they were last year in the bubble playoffs. I mean, temper expectations in terms of the fact that you could probably still be a playoff team because of two things. One, they're not even halfway done the season yet. And two, they have those generally elusive and always trying to be sought after, but this season, obviously a little bit different with COVID, two games in hand on so many teams in the renamed East Division. And when you're playing only divisional teams, any kind of win in regulation equates to a four-point swing. Now, tonight, there's no four-point swing because of the fact that it took you to get to overtime to beat the New York Rangers. But you do get that extra point as opposed to losing in overtime and only coming away with 1 point, which, again, you know, this is a different conversation for a different time. The overtime point is silly. There should be no overtime point. No other sport allows you to go to overtime and just say, hey, here's a participation point. Good luck. But that's a conversation for a different time. But the reason I said that I believe that they could get back to some kind of playoff success under the guise of tempering expectations is because of the way that they played well tonight. And I don't mean tonight they played well like a good full game. I mean when they had their moments that where they played well, that's the team I look at and go, this team is deep. This team's got a ton of depth from I think, all four lines. Five different players scored a goal tonight. And then, on the flip side, I take a look at the issues. And it's not new issues. This isn't something that popped up in the last week or since the Flyers returned from Lake Tahoe, or since the Flyers got back to full strength after their COVID protocol ended with most of their players. It's something that's been going on for the entirety of the season. And it's that the defense has been horrendous. The one goal in particular tonight, where it effectively, to me, looked like Shane Gostisbehere had zero clue where he was on the ice. Like, ice awareness was negative for Shane Gostisbehere in that particular play. And I believe it was the goal that put the Rangers up, I want to say 3-2. But I'm going to go back and take a look at the box score really quickly so I'm not lying to you. Yes, it was the goal late in the second period that put the Rangers up 3-2. Now, of course, Joel Farabee ties it really late in the second with about a minute and a half left. Kevin Rooney takes the lead again 3 minutes into the third period. Claude Giroux ties it just about 2 minutes later. They go to OT. Well, and of course, the Kevin Hayes goal that was not sends the game to OT. Jake Voracek scores the game winner. But the problems with the Flyers have been consistent throughout the entirety of the season. And that, Marlo, brought up a really good point before the show started, and I'm going to let Nat explain his point in further detail when we get back, because this is going to be a very short segment here. But the basics of what Nat was saying was this team wins and loses the same way every time. There's a formula to this team's success. There's a formula to this team's struggles. And when we get back from the other side of the break, because again, this is going to be a little bit of a shorter segment because of the fact that the game went into overtime, I'm going to let Nat go in further detail about that point. But he's correct. This team seemingly has a formula. And it is almost win by the sword and lose by the sword. But the problem that I don't know is where I have the biggest issue talking about sustainability, again, stems back from the defense. So I want to pose effectively a very similar question that Jason posed to me in the Fanatic Flyers Weekly because of everything that we just watched transpire over the last 63 and a half minutes of hockey. Are you confident in the Flyers being able to sustain the way that they play and be a playoff team? Jason asked me, do I think they can turn it around? And I believe that the answer is yes, I do. Because I believe that this team is too talented to not turn it around. But I understand the frustrations. I understand the issues. I understand the concern if your answer is no. 610-632-0975. Do you believe that the way that the Flyers are playing right now, the model in which they have seemingly formulated themselves, both good and bad, is sustainable for them to be a playoff team? We take you until midnight here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Nat Marlowe, you're in my seat today. Appreciate you joining us last moment. So thank you for your availability and good evening.
Well, it's great to be here, Tyler. Any chance I can get to be behind the board here, I always take it.
What was a 5-4 win? Some good, some bad, some ugly. What was your biggest takeaway from this game in any direction?
The biggest takeaway for me in any direction is, for me personally, is that I've come to terms with the fact that it's the same thing virtually every game when it comes to this Philadelphia Flyers team. You're going to get a bit of offense. In some way, shape, or form, you're going to get a bit of offense from this team. That is one thing this team can almost guarantee every single game. But also, in every single game, you are going to get atrocious defense. It is egregiously bad. Whether it's from Shane Gostisbehere, whether it's from Robert Haig, or God forbid Erik Gustafsson, you are not going to get this team defending a whole lot.
All right, so the six defensemen that played today, Justin Braun, Shane Gostisbehere, Phil Myers, Nate Prosser, Ivan Provorov, Travis Sanheim. Two had a positive plus minus. One was at zero. So, Justin Braun, oddly enough, was one of the two positives. He had a plus two. Ivan Provorov also had a plus two. Travis Sanheim was a minus one. Shane Gostisbehere was a minus three. Nate Prosser was a minus three. That is not a sustainable method for success. If, and this is where the if comes in, and this is why I circle back to believing that the Flyers can make a return to being a playoff team if you're not scoring five goals a night. It's a very obvious and probably overstated problem. But it is so obvious that we have to discuss it. The defense, as you mentioned, Nat, has been effectively non-existent. I mentioned in the beginning of the show, Shane Gostisbehere on the 3-2 goal not only got beat, I can absolve getting beat. Sometimes you're not playing well. It's the out of position issue consistently for Shane Gostisbehere that I have a problem with.
And that's a problem that several offensive defensemen have. But it is egregious from Shane Gostisbehere and Eric Gustafson specifically with this team.
Well, and so with that, that kind of parlays directly into the problem that your casual fan is going to look at, because casual fan will look at the box score first and say another 833 save percentage night for Carter Hart. So we're going to break down that a little bit further, because Carter Hart does not deserve this. Carter Hart is being left out on an island time and time and time again.
Correct.
Has Carter Hart been perfect? No, definitely not. Because as Jason mentioned, as Timmy and Coatsy mentioned on the broadcast, that glove side has been an issue. It has. I mean, we're not going to like deny that. We're not going to give Carter Hart this like total pass. There have been problems with Carter Hart's game this season that we've not seen that we hadn't seen last year. But this defense is doing him no favors. So we're going to get into that a little bit on the other side as well. 610-632-0975. John in Center City, you're going to be the first one up when we get back. Appreciate you hanging through the break with our shorter first segment, and then it can be you. We'll continue the Flyers conversation as the Flyers beat the New York Rangers 5-4 in overtime in Madison Square Garden. Get one pull within 1 point of the Boston Bruins in the Eastern Division. 610-632-0975. Nat Marler producing the show. I'm Tyler Zulli. We take you until midnight right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back to In the Crease here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Tyler Zulli in for Devon Givens. Devon will be back tomorrow for In the Post and for the Philadelphia 76ers game from 10 to 12. Actually, from 11 to 12, because I think it's an 8 o'clock tip tomorrow as they take on New York.
And you and me producing the big show tomorrow.
That'll be us. Yes, yes. We will have that game, of course, for you right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Game tips at 8 o'clock, meaning that Brian Seltzer will be on the airwaves for the Sixers pregame show at 7:50. 610-632-0975. I am Tyler Zulli, filling in for Devon Givens. Nat Marlowe, that voice you just heard, is producing the show. He's in my seat today. Guys, by the way, I want to tell you guys about, because it is right around the corner, I want to tell you about the Fanatic Bracket Challenge. Of course, the 97.5 The Fanatic Million Dollar Bracket Challenge is back, where perfection pays off. So what happens is you get a perfect bracket, you win $1 million. Seems improbable, but it's not impossible. And even if you don't get a perfect bracket starting today, what you're going to do is go to 97.5thefanatic.com and fill out your bracket. And if you have the best bracket, you'll win $1,000. 97.5 The Fanatic's Million Dollar Bracket Challenge is brought to you by the Parks Casino Sportsbook app. The official sportsbook partner of the Real Philly Fan. Must be 21. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. We'll talk a little bit more about the NCAA tournament as we go along in the show. We've got a lot to get into, but we do want to begin the show tonight with the Philadelphia Flyers 5-4 overtime win over the New York Rangers. Saw some good, a.k.a. I thought that Jake Voracek played one of his best games this season. Not just in that overtime period where he had an absolutely incredible long shift to end the period. And, of course, it ended with the game-winning goal. But I thought he was fantastic pretty much throughout the night. He had that game-winning goal, two assists, played almost 19 minutes of ice time. I thought he was really good tonight. 610-632-0975. Let's start on the phones in Center City with John on the Fanatic. What's going on, John?
Hey, enjoy listening to you guys after Flyers victory.
Oh, well, thank you for making the call. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Now, Drew had a great game. Now he has to be consistent. Game in, game out, he has to be consistent. As the Flyers are very inconsistent.
I think that, well, I mean, quite honestly, I think that Giroux's been pretty consistent for most of the season this year.
Right.
I mean, he's got 21 yeah. points in 24 games. You know, obviously the goal scoring numbers are a little bit down, but he's never been a high volume goal scorer. But I think the 21 points in 24 games right. has been pretty solid so far.
Well, yeah, yes. But, you know, let's see what happens come playoff time. You know, because he was a lot of pressure on himself. And believe me, I'm a Drew fan. I'm a big Flyers fan, but, you know, hasn't done it in the playoffs. And that's, you know, it could be this year. It could be the year, hopefully.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think the Flyers got to make a move. I mean, Shane, you know, you want to see the kid. He's too small. And, man, every time I see I've seen him make so many mistakes. And, you know, it's frustrating.
Who makes so many mistakes?
Shane
Dawson. Oh, Gostisbehere, yes.
Yeah, and you know I like him. You know, he has a nice shot from the point, but yeah, they got to see if they can't get that kid from Nashville, that defenseman.
Yeah, I know that Jason was talking about that earlier, and that's a move that has been, I think, I don't want to say in the works, but it has been discussed for, you know, I don't want to say quite some time, but it's been discussed for the last couple of weeks now. It would cost you a lot. Are you now? Here's the thing, John. I don't know if you've heard me say this before about other sports teams, but I am a big believer in proven over prospect. And if that's the case, I'm going to be willing to make that trade to make this team better this season.
Well, yeah, but then you would have to give up another good defenseman next year because you can't. Yeah, they can only cover what, four defensemen. So they're going to lose a
yes.
player.
Yeah, because of the expansion draft, you're going to end up losing one of the defensemen that you don't protect.
Right.
And by the way, Mattias Ekholm is the name that I believe you're thinking of.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
so
he's big too, isn't he big?
Let me go take a look at his number or his size real quick. He's 6'4", 215. I knew he was.
Yeah, that's what they need. They need that. They get pushed around too much. Yeah, the Flyers are no longer the Broad Street Bullies.
This well, and you can't you can't expect them to be. The NHL is not that way anymore.
I know that. But anyway, they're a joy to watch, and even the Sixers are a joy. It's good to watch two good teams playing, and but they got to make a trade. They got to do something. Even if you give up Morgan Frost, you know, give up a couple of those good players, maybe from the Phantoms, and maybe throw in Shane Gostisbehere. But you know. They got to go for it. I want him to win a cup for Giroux.
John, appreciate
and Carter Hart. He's only 22.
Yeah, he's got plenty of time left. John, appreciate the phone call. Here's the thing, John. I agree with John. I would go make a move. Mattias Ekholm is a name that we've heard, right? I would probably go do it. I'd be on the phone right now after after what I saw from Gostisbehere tonight. After the fact that I see three different players as a negative, as a minus. Just on the defensive side of things alone, I'd probably be on the phone tonight. Here is the problem. I think John's premise is good. The execution is flawed.
Yes.
Because you have to understand, when you're going to make a trade, and of course you want to win every trade. You want to feel like you've come away from a trade winning every trade. Whether you are the recipient of the team that is the recipient of the trade that's getting the proven piece, the building piece, or you are the team that is rebuilding and you're getting younger, you're acquiring assets and draft picks and things like that. You always want to feel like you've come away winning the trade. It never works out that very rarely does it work out where both teams win a trade. I think one example that you're going to see, and that we're going to go to baseball for a second, is the Phillies Marlins trade for JT Realmuto and Sixto Sanchez. I truly believe, and I still make that move every single day of the week to get the best catcher in baseball. I truly believe that trade is going to benefit both teams because the Phillies got the best catcher in baseball and the Marlins got a young, hard-throwing starter who looks like he's got some stuff. But very rarely do both teams come out of a trade equally impressed with what they've earned. But this is not a video game. This is not a simulation. I often say the one thing that people need to understand is when you're considering trade talks, you can't just do like in Madden or NHL, right? You get the bar, the interest bar, and it's like, oh, they're 75% interested. Let me add a third round pick. And now they're 92%, right? And that's how video games work, because that's the only way that you can make a simulation happen. This is real life. And in real life, you need two interested trade partners who both believe they're getting the better of a deal.
So, Tyler, you mean to tell me that Chuck Fletcher isn't just calling Peter Chiarelli up in Edmonton and say, hey, can we do a one-for-one deal, Shane Gostisbehere, for Connor McDavid?
Yeah, let me just get
you mean
that,
that's
that
not
McDavid
a real thing
guy.
That can happen?
No. So, in this instance, right, I think that Matthias Ekholm, he's not going to cost you, you know, seven players and six first-round picks. That's not going to happen. But he is going to cost you probably at least one NHL defenseman. Meaning, I think, from a contract standpoint, it's Shane Gostisbehere. As much as we just talked poorly about Shane Gostisbehere, I imagine that he's the one that would be in the trade.
Well, would they even want Shane Gostisbehere?
And that's the question. Do you want the return? The rest of the return has to pique their interest, right? So the rest of the return has to be, I'm not putting Morgan Frost in that deal. But
you got to sweeten the deal somehow.
Right. So you have to put a player in there that Nashville believes that they could rebuild with. Not around. It's not going to be a superstar in the making. But they believe that they could rebuild with. So whomever. Pick. Is it Cam York?
No. I would not throw Cam York in that deal.
Why?
Because I think he's too good to trade away. Or at least the potential for him to be too good.
And again, that's where you and I differ. Right? Because you know me. I'm proven over prospect. I believe Cam York's going to be a star.
See, that,
I do.
And what does this Flyers team need now more than anything? Defense.
Defensive help.
So that's why I'm willing to part ways with Morgan Frost over Cam York right now.
Which is fair. If you're picking one, that's totally fair. I am of the mindset that this team right now is the most important thing because they're close. They're not Sixers championship contender.
No. They've taken a step back,
but they're playoff contender.
Yes.
And with the fact that Carter Hart is going to improve, we assume that like the graph is they run parallel, right? So they're going to go in the same direction. If you're like looking on a bar graph, they're going to go in the same direction. Better defense equals better Carter Hart. Like that's not earth shattering by any means. But Cam York doesn't help this team this year. Does Cam York help this team next year?
I mean, I think there's a potential that he might cut his college career a little bit short, and I'm not the only one who's been saying that.
So if he does, is he a Flyer? Or does he go to Lehigh Valley?
Defensemen typically take a little bit longer to develop than forwards, so I believe you see him a year in Lehigh Valley before he becomes a Philadelphia Flyer.
So you're talking about 2 years.
I think it's likely he spends a full year in the AHL.
Right.
Unless he puts up Sanheim numbers in the AHL, because remember when Sanheim cracked the NHL roster on a regular basis, but then they sent him down to the AHL and he was averaging like a point and a half a game?
Yes.
Unless he's putting up numbers like that, I don't see him cracking the NHL roster, only spending a few months in the AHL. So I think you have to leave him in there for a full year, get him used to that grind of playing every day, get used to these trips before he cracks the NHL roster. So because defensemen just take a little bit longer to develop.
What you have to consider then is, I guess, championship window versus breaking point. And how far away from a championship window are the Flyers versus how far away from the breaking point are they? Now, what do I mean by that? The championship window, that's obvious. You know what the championship window is. It's obviously the time frame in which you feel they could be a championship contender. How far away from that are they? The breaking point. What I mean by that is, when does it start to downturn? Because of the fact that Claude Giroux, Jake Voracek, James Van Riemsdyk, they're all getting older. They're not old, but they're getting older. So are you capitalizing on that group? or are you going to capitalize on the following group? That's where you have to make your decision. And for me, while I think that the following group is going to be very talented, I don't know yet. Because Cam York's playing collegiate hockey. I don't think I'm willing to get to part ways with Morgan Frost because I believe he's right there being NHL ready, where Cam York's not. But if Matthias, I guess if Morgan Frost is the piece that they want in return for Matthias Ekholm, I might consider it. I don't like it, but I might consider it. 610-632-0975. Lance in Arizona is up next on the Fanatic. What's up, Lance?
So I completely disagree with you because I don't think this team is close. Like they might miss the playoffs. And if you make that trade, it's not a given the goaltending gets better. The goaltending's just been bad. The defense hasn't been good. Don't get me wrong. The defense hasn't helped. But the goaltending hasn't been good either.
So correct. Carter Hart's been not great. I am not going to try to – I'm not trying to hide that.
He's always been this with the Flyers when they started this rebuild. The timeline for Claude Giroux and the timeline for Jake Voracek was not the same timeline for your young players to get where they needed to become a legit Stanley Cup contender. So the problem is you had these two contracts running their course, and these young players aren't ready yet. They showed that last year in the playoffs. The Islanders took it to them. If it wasn't for Carter Hart in some of those games, the Flyers wouldn't have gone 7 games. They were fortunate Carter Hart saved them in some of those games.
I don't disagree.
To make it to 7 games.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I agree with you.
Because by the time they got there, they were just gone. And they needed all those overtimes just to get to game 7. So I look at it this way. The biggest problem the Flyers made was is not because Claude Giroux sucks or Claude Giroux is bad. That was not any part of it. Is that you have to know what your timeline was. Your timeline was these young players are going to take 3 to 4 years to get to where you want to be a legit Stanley Cup contender. You're only in year 2 and 3 with some of them. Like, you're not that far. Like, Philip Myers has only been up for 1.5 years. Like, Sanheim, 2 years. Provorov's been the one that's the most, and he still needs to improve. You're not there yet. So if you make the Ekholm trade, the other problem is there's an expansion draft coming up.
Correct.
You're going to lose somebody if you do that trade. So you're not just hurting yourself with that trade where you lose a prospect. You're going to lose another one when you go into that expansion draft unless you give up picks so that they don't take your guy. So you're really hurting yourself, and you're not really a true Cup contender because I think the Islanders are better. I think Washington's better. I think Boston's struggling right now, but when Boston gets going again, they're better. You're not beating most three teams even if you get Ekholm.
So,
are you making that trade to give up prospects and then you're going to lose more prospects when the expansion draft comes? It doesn't make any sense.
So here's the reason as to why I'm making this trade. And it is because Ekholm is not going to break the bank. I think the biggest thing they're going to want is one, I guess, top level prospect, and then the draft picks around it, because after that it's contract conversation. So,
but you're looking at it as that trade is a singular. There's multiple aspects of that because there's an expansion draft coming up. You can only hold so many guys. So
correct.
If you have 4 defensemen that you want to hold, Ekholm has to be either put out there, or you're going to have Sanheim, or you're going to have Provorov, or you're going to have Myers. One of them's going to get taken.
I don't believe that Seattle would take Ekholm at 31 years old.
He's only making one. What is he making? Like 3.75.
3.75. Yeah.
1 year old defenseman. Like, yeah. That's nothing.
With 1 year left on his deal, though.
Well, here's your other problem, though, is that they'll say, we're going to take him. So what are you going to give us so we don't take him? And then you're going to have to give up picks, and you're going to lose another prospect. So you're not just losing Morgan Frost. You're going to lose another prospect making that deal. To me, I don't make that deal because I don't think they're a Cup contender. The problem is this. If they keep playing like they have, like they won tonight, and that the Rangers haven't been playing well either, so like you're going to face the Islanders after this next game against the Rangers. That's 3 straight games, and the Islanders are playing out of their mind right now.
Playing really well.
And then you're going to face Boston again at the beginning of April, and I'm guessing they're probably going to be out of their funk at that time. You might get to the trade deadline and be 6-7 points back of a playoff spot if you keep playing like this. You're going to make a trade for what?
Well, no. If they find themselves out of a playoff spot, no, you don't make the trade. Lance, appreciate the phone call. Thanks for joining us today. Yeah, if you're out of a playoff spot, obviously you're not going. And right now, obviously they're not in a great spot, or not in a playoff spot, I should say. But they're close, right? They're a point off from Boston. They're what, 6 off of Actually, I think Pittsburgh won again tonight. But they're a point out of away from Boston. And they're – no, okay, they are six away from Pittsburgh right now. So this is with the understanding that they get into a playoff spot. Or they're right there. If they're 7, 8, 9 points out of a playoff spot, no, you don't make that trade. That I totally understand. You have to understand the value of where you're at versus like how much one player makes a difference. That I totally get. Which is why if they are, you know, it comes playoff time and they're 9 points behind Boston or 7 points behind Boston even, I probably don't make a big trade. Because then Lance is correct. You're mortgaging multiple pieces of your future to maybe get into the playoffs. This is under the impression that they're going to be a playoff team, because I still believe they're going to be a playoff team, despite the fact that I don't think that the way that they played, both, I guess, offensively a little bit, but I think they've been productive enough, but specifically defensively and then looking at the goaltending position. So, like, Nat, you get where I'm coming from, right?
Absolutely.
Like, if they're in a playoff, if they are playoff contention, then you go and make the trade. Because at playoff contention, you're going to have Ekholm for 2 years. Well, a year and a half. I truly do not believe that Seattle would pick a guy, a 31-year-old defenseman. And $4 million is not a lot. I get that. But I don't think that they're going to pick a 31-year-old defenseman with 1 year left on his deal.
Then his cap actually might not be enough for them, because with the expansion team, they're going to want players that actually have more cap money, so that way they can hit that cap
floor. Well, you have to hit a cap floor, right? Which is like, I hate to bring up video games because they're totally different, but like if you've ever done an expansion team in the NHL franchise game, like at some point you got like I'll give you an example. In NHL 19, you have to pick Mark Giordano because of the money, right? So at some point, you're going to have to take a James Van Riemsdyk or a Jake Voracek versus a Matthias Ekholm. And I'm not saying that specific example, but you're going to have to do that at some point, where you take the $8, $9, $10 million cap hit versus the $3 million cap hit to, as you said, Nat, get to the cap floor. There's no perfect answer for the Flyers right now. Because
Is in hockey.
I don't know how good they actually are. But under the premise that I believe that they can still be a playoff team, that is when I make the move. It doesn't have anything to do with just making a trade to make a trade, right? And again, I believe in the proven over prospect theory, but only when you're in a position to strike. Like right now, the Eagles would be very foolish to trade and I know they don't have any money, but to sign somebody in free agency versus drafting a position of need because they're a bad football team. If the Flyers were a bad hockey team, we would not be discussing Matthias Ekholm. But they're not a bad hockey team. They've played some bad hockey recently. I think they still have an opportunity to turn things around.
Yeah, it could be worse. Yeah, it could be Buffalo.
That's one of the worst teams I've ever... If it wasn't for Detroit last year, I would truly consider that Buffalo team having one of the worst stretches I've ever seen.
I feel like Detroit's actually putting in an effort. I feel like they're actually trying to play hockey, and Buffalo is just like, nope, no effort.
Well,
you're barely getting any effort from Eichel. It looks like you're not getting any from Taylor Hall.
Oh, do you think you're going to get any effort from Taylor Hall anyway?
Where the heck is Eric Staal as well?
Taylor Hall signed that contract knowing he was going to hit free agency next year and make it a ton of money.
And he said he wanted to go to a contending team, but he chooses Buffalo?
Because they offered him the highest AAV. I don't blame him. I can get my money when I can go get my money. 610-632-0975. We'll continue the Flyers conversation into the 11 o'clock hour. I also want to dive into the Philadelphia Eagles, because free agency technically begins today. The legal tampering period begins today. And you're seeing teams do stuff all over the NFL. The New England Patriots specifically have made a ton of moves on the first 24 hours of free agency. And you know who's not making any moves? That would be the Philadelphia Eagles. Let me tell you why it is the correct thing to do on the other side for the Eagles to do absolutely nothing. 610-632-0975. We move into the final hour of In the Crease right here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Tremendous timing by our fantastic producer, Nat Marlowe, here, because this album, for those of you that are not of the metal and rock community fan base, this album, Ascendancy, by the band Trivium, is officially 16 years old today. One of the premier new age metal albums, I think, of all time. And you know what the funny thing is, Nat, about this album for me? Now, I don't know how big of a Trivium fan you are or not, but for me, this album would have been the best album for like 90% of modern metal bands, because Ascendancy is fantastic. That song, Rain, just an awesome album from top to bottom. Would have been the best metal album for like 90% of modern metal bands. I don't think that that's their best album. And the reason I say that is because they have an album called Shogun, which is legitimately metal music perfection from start to finish. It is probably one of my two favorite albums of all time. It's amazing to me that a band, in my estimation, now, if you're not a metal fan or you don't like Trivium or you just don't care, it's amazing to me how a band can put out multiple what I believe to be premier albums, and you have to pick which one's the second best. You have any other bands like that where you're like, man, this would have been the best album for like 75% of the genre, but it's not even their best album?
Oh, tough. Man, there's a number of different records that I could think of like that. Oh, man. Like,
you know what I love too, by the way, while you're thinking about that? You and I are both young.
Yes.
Right? And I call them albums. You call them records. And I actually...
I just noticed that.
I actually tweeted one day. I was going on a long car ride. I think I was driving up to Boston. My fiance was living up in Boston at the time. And I was going up to visit her for a weekend. And I tweeted something along the lines of like, hey, anybody got any really good albums to listen to that are new or that maybe I haven't heard of before? And somebody tweeted at me back and said, albums, question mark? And I'm like, yeah, what do you call them? And they said, I think they said playlists. And I'm like, but here's the thing. If I have the physical copy of it, or I'm listening to the whole thing in general, it's not a playlist. A playlist to me is like a congregation of multiple different artists and different songs and different and things like that.
Yeah, or a collection of like different songs by the same artist among different albums.
Right.
So,
but the one, top to bottom, track list one to track list whatever they have, 10, 12, 15, whatever it is an album. I don't know. They tweeted back at me like I was crazy. I just assumed, like, even though there's not really physical copies anymore, and I do know that vinyl's coming back. But like, even though there's really not physical copies anymore, you digitally download most things now. You still digitally download the album.
Yeah, like most of the albums that I have, like, they were from digital download from when I was still in high school.
Right. So like, whether you use Apple Music, Spotify, Pandora, whatever your listening choice is, it's still an album.
Yeah. Like, if you're not getting it from that, you're either like listening to a single, or you're getting it from an EP.
Right. I don't know. They tweeted at me like I was crazy, but I just wanted to see if maybe you felt the same way. Did you think of an album that fits that category of like, would have been awesome for any other band, but it's not even the best album for the band you can think of.
So you know me and how much I love A Day to Remember. So, and you love the album Homesick.
Correct.
And I think for a lot of pop punk bands, you know, that is the quintessential, like, heavy pop punk album. But
sure.
To me, it's their follow-up album, What Separates Me From You. That album, I think, is perfect from start to finish.
Okay.
Like, the way the songs are written, the way track order placement is crucial to me. Because
I agree. I look at track order placement like a batting order in baseball.
Their latest album, You're Welcome, has a horrible track order. I think that's part of the reason why you hated their last record.
Yeah,
I love all the songs on that record.
It was a pop album.
Yeah, but it's definitely different. I mean, they're the new Bring Me the Horizon, because Bring Me the Horizon will make an album like 2 years ahead of the curve, and everyone will go, what the heck? This isn't the old Bring Me the Horizon. Let's go back to Shadow Moses. Let's go back to Amo, and like whatever the next Bring Me the Horizon album 2 years down the line is going to be, people are going to go, why isn't this like their last record? This isn't Bring Me the Horizon anymore. A Day to Remember is the exact same thing.
I'm okay with bands changing and artists changing. You're allowed to like change your style, and because here's the thing: A, you get older; B, you have different life experiences, you know; and C, maybe if you are in our case where we listen to a lot of heavier stuff, it gets to a point you probably don't want to make heavy music anymore. I get it. I just don't want to listen to the new album anymore.
Okay, don't
make me.
Is that
fair?
Yes, but don't make me bring up this example.
Nope.
So would you?
Nope.
You know where I'm going with this.
We're
going
to skip it.
You know exactly where I'm going with it.
That's enough music talk for a sports station, because we're going to skip it. 610-632-0975. Let's move on to NFL free agency. And by the way, the Flyers conversation is still open if you'd like to get in and discuss the 5-4 victory for the Philadelphia Flyers over the New York Rangers in OT. NFL free agency, and I love NFL free agency trackers because they're perfectly set up for us to be able to find everything we need in a very condensed sample size. So I'm looking at CBS Sports NFL free agency tracker, and no surprise that the number one free agent on the top 100 free agent tracker is Dak Prescott. Not a surprise there, right? I mean, the quarterback generally trumps every other position. It just kind of is what it is.
And that deal he got, too, was
substantial. Ooh. Right. So I'm looking at some of the names that are on here, and I'm seeing a lot of recurring themes with the team that is, specific teams. I think that the team that jumps out the most is the New England Patriots, who spent like $160 million over the course of contracts today. They signed tight end Jonnu Smith. They signed wide receiver Kendrick Bourne. And they signed former Philadelphia Eagle Jalen Mills to a 4-year, $24 million deal.
All right.
So you see in a lot of the same teams pop up. I see Cincinnati's on here quite a few times with free agents that are not re-signing in Cincinnati, which I don't blame them because that team absolutely stinks. But a lot of the same teams are popping up. And consistently, you know who I don't see is the Philadelphia Eagles.
Just crickets.
And right that is for two reasons. The first being the obvious is the Philadelphia Eagles first have to find themselves cap compliant before they can go and spend any money, right? So they still have some room to make some moves and maneuver to get themselves under the cap situation. And the second, and probably the most important, is the fact that I think for the first time, and we talked about it at length in the discussion with the Jeff McClain piece this weekend and all throughout the week, you have heard every different angle and different take about that article. Even with Howie Roseman seemingly having unlimited power, and Jeffrey Lurie allowing him to have unlimited power with the understanding that Jeffrey Lurie now has more of an involvement with the football operations side of things instead of just being the owner, I think for the first time the Philadelphia Eagles understand something crucial. And it's that the Philadelphia Eagles understand they're not a good football team. And that is something that is really difficult to do for a proud football organization, for an organization that, and Nat, you hear me talk about this all the time, We are a spoiled generation of Eagles fans. Our age group is a spoiled generation of Eagles fans.
All things considering, yeah.
Because despite the fact, you know, there is just the one Super Bowl and two appearances, but it's the most winning, the 2000s were the most winning decade in Eagles football history.
Yeah, we haven't experienced a whole lot of terrible losing.
Right.
Like, this is the worst season that I could
ever
imagine.
Since 2000, the Eagles have had five losing seasons. So you take into account that they had a 500 season, and you're left with like, and I want to take a look and see how many other five. I don't know the exact record, but you're left with double digit winning seasons, many years of success for the Philadelphia Eagles. So we are a spoiled generation as Eagles fans, you and I, and some of our other younger coworkers here at the station. It's fair to say. So when you have a spoiled generation of fan bases, of a fan base like our generation is, ownership and front offices and football operations are going to be super hesitant to understand and recognize and accept that they're a bad football team.
But well, the first step is admitting that. First step is admitting you have a problem.
And that problem is that they are a bad football team.
Precisely.
So with the Eagles doing that, it allows them to begin to rebuild. And that's exactly why the Philadelphia Eagles have been not just quiet, but non-existent in the free agent market, paired with the fact that they don't have any money. The Eagles are going to sign players because they have to form a roster, right? They have to get to the 53-man roster. But it is going to be very small moves. They're probably going to sign a quarterback. Now, whether that quarterback is just Nate Sudfeld or they go outside of the organization and they say, you know, the names that we've heard before, Jacoby Brissett is of interest. We've heard the reports that came out earlier today and we've heard that name before.
Heard some Fitzpatrick talk
Ryan
as well.
Fitzpatrick, Tyrod Taylor, you know, the veteran quarterback who could be somebody that if either Jalen Hurts gets hurt or Jalen Hurts doesn't play well, could step in. Could also be a true mentor for Jalen Hurts, if necessary. They're going to sign a quarterback. I also believe they're going to draft a quarterback at some point later in the draft. They're going to sign some sort of secondary help. And it may not necessarily be help in the terms of like, okay, this is a safety who could really fill in at both safety positions. I'm talking about they're going to go and replace Rudy Ford, who is a special teams player who did not re-sign, right? They're going to sign, I think, depth at linebacker because they're not going to re-sign Nate Gary. They're going to be re-signing, they're going to be signing depth and value position, positional value pieces. But them not making a move to sign a guy like Kenny Golladay, who I know we would love, a guy like Hunter Henry, who is still a star tight end in the NFL, a guy like Curtis Samuel, who is just an offensive weapon all over the field. Them understanding that that's not the right move is the right move. Because that allows you to build through the draft. That allows you to see what your quarterback can do. That allows you to get young talent under the assumption, and this is a big if, that Howie Roseman gets it right. More so than not. He's not going to be perfect, but he has a above 50% draft success in 2021. The Eagles are probably 2 years away. Now, I heard earlier today throughout different conversations that I had with friends, with other people here at the station that feel like the Eagles may be closer than you think. I just don't see it.
Well, I mean, to me, 2 years is actually pretty close. Like, to me, that's as optimistic as I'm getting, that they're 2 years away.
And that, by the way, that is from competing. That is not from being a Super Bowl contender. They're going to be bad this year. And I think they're going to be bad next year.
I think they're going to be worse.
Next year or this year?
This coming year, they're going to be worse.
Than they were last year.
Yes.
Could totally see it.
I think they're in this universe, in this reality we live in right now, I think there's a potential this team can go 0-16. I can legitimately see that happening.
I don't think it's that bad. Because I look at some of the teams that went 0-16, the two teams that were 0-16, they are better than the Browns team that went 0-16, and they're definitely better than the Detroit team that went 0-16.
I mean, that's a tough schedule they have ahead of them this season.
It's a very difficult schedule, because you're playing the AFC West, who it's a division that I think you could have three different teams be playoff teams. Kansas City's almost a mortal lock, right? The Chargers could be legit with a new head coach and a second-year quarterback, Justin Herbert. They get Derwin James back healthy. Could be a legit team. And we don't know with Las Vegas. We saw some good stuff from Vegas last year. We saw some bad stuff with Vegas last year. The Vegas Raiders might be the Philadelphia Flyers, to be fair.
I mean, that's the Raiders for you.
So that's a tough division. Then you go to the NFC South, which they have to play the entirety of the NFC South. I think Jameis Winston makes the Saints just as good as they were last year because Drew Brees had no arm left. I don't think Drew Brees was any good last year.
I mean, he was running on fumes.
And they won, what did they win, 12 games, 13 games last year? I think Jameis Winston makes them just as good because his ceiling at this point is higher than what Drew Brees' ceiling was. He's a much better playmaker at this point. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, coming off a Super Bowl, going to be equally as good as they were last season. The Atlanta Falcons, and you know that I don't like Matt Ryan. I think he stinks and I think he's overrated. But they're a couple of defensive pieces away from being a contender, whether it be with Matt Ryan or with Justin Fields or with Zach Wilson or with Trey Lance, whomever it may be with, it's not going to be an easy win. Carolina was better than what we thought they were. I thought Carolina was going to be the worst team in the NFL last year. Matt Rhule proved me wrong in his first season. That's another tough game. San Francisco is the other NFC team that they play. They could be a playoff team again.
Yeah, I can totally see San Francisco bouncing back.
They had a slew of injuries that made them a 6-10 team. I think they make the playoffs next year. With or without Garoppolo. Because I think they win despite him, not with him. And then you've got your six NFC East games. Dallas will be better with a healthy full season of Dak Prescott. Washington is a quarterback away, I think. Even though I believe it was foolish to not restructure Alex Smith. But they're a quarterback away. I don't think the Giants are very good, but it's a divisional game. If you said to me the Eagles are going to win 3 or 4 games next year, I wouldn't be shocked.
That's me being optimistic right there.
I would not be shocked if they win 3 or 4 games next year.
If they win one game, dare I say, I won't be happy if they win only one game, but one more win than I'm expecting.
But it wouldn't surprise you, is what you're saying. I think that they're in the 3 to 5 win range. So, with all of that being said, what the Eagles are doing right now is perfect. Why is it perfect? Because they're recognizing that they're not a good football team who has cap issues. And they're going to attempt to rebuild through the draft. I don't trust Howie Roseman at all to make the right decision. But it's the only thing that I can do. Right? Like, I don't make the decisions. I believe that I have a really good eye for college talent. I watch a lot of college football. I watch a lot of games that nobody even cares about because I'm just kind of weird that way. But I don't make the decisions. Nat, you don't make the decisions.
No, but if I could make a decision, I would totally hire you as a scout.
I appreciate that.
That's what the Eagles need. Right? They need you as one of their prime scouts.
I appreciate that.
Howie Roseman, if you're listening right now, hey, Howie, Tyler, he's your guy. Do it. You will not regret this.
I'll go watch the group of five games. Like, send me to Tulsa. Send me to UL Lafayette. Like, I'm all in.
There's opportunities, dude.
Send me to Coastal Carolina. Let's do it. But
let's get some of my Sean DeClears on this Philadelphia Eagles team.
The point being, through all of that, you know, silliness that we just kind of went through, the point being the Eagles are in a spot where they cannot push back the future or push back needing to rebuild any longer. They've done it enough already by having to restructure contracts to get to this point, to get cap compliant. But they can't do it any further. They can't harm themselves any further by attempting to go and sign older veterans. They just have to let this thing be what it is. And this thing, what it is not very good. In fact, it's very bad. But the only way to get better is to build through the draft.
And admit you have a problem.
610-632-0975. Josh in Lower Merion, I want to give you all your time, so we're going to get to you first on the other side, and then it can be you. And just a reminder, by the way, 11:45, we're going to get to the leftovers. Normally, I do them with Devon. Devon, much-deserved night off, so I'm in his seat, Nat Marlowe in my seat, so Nat will provide us with the leftovers. 610-632-0975. One more segment as we take you until midnight, right here on 97.5
The Fanatic. 97.5
The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
One final segment here on 97.5 The Fanatic. We're in the crease for Devon Givens. I'll be back tomorrow for In the Post. I'm Tyler Zuli. Nat Marlowe producing the show today. 610-632-0975. Got a little bit of news to get to in just a second. So we'll talk about a couple of different things. But I do want to get Josh in Lower Merion up next on The Fanatic because he has been waiting patiently. Josh, good evening.
What's up, bud?
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. Yeah, I love the quarterback conversation because it's one of those things that, like, a lot of other sports don't have. You know, you talk about, like, Dak Prescott and Garoppolo. I feel like now more than ever, you can't win a Super Bowl with, you know, a mediocre quarterback. And it's crazy. You go back to, like, Peyton Manning on the Broncos, and he won it, and it was the NFC, but he was still Peyton Manning. You know, so, like, even then, you know, yeah, he did win it. Maybe he wasn't at his best. But when the Cowboys go and sign Dak to this ridiculous contract, I don't think there's a team that they can put around him that makes him a Super Bowl winner.
So I guess that's where it because I am a bigger Dak Prescott fan than most in this city. And I say fan.
You're the only one in the city.
I say fan. I don't root for him. And I don't root for the Cowboys. I just mean from an objective standpoint, I like him better than most. So I guess the question would be, where do you see Dak as, like, if you were to go and to make, like, a tier list, right? Where do you slot Dak Prescott into a tier?
Well, you know what? A couple of years ago, I feel like the game has changed so much that away from the run, where you're asking the quarterback to do so much that, you know, even, I mean, Mahomes lost last year, you know, because they couldn't build the team around him. It's just crazy. And especially with these contracts, like, look at the dead cat we have for Wentz now. I almost feel like to win a Super Bowl, you have to have that elite quarterback. And you know what? I mean, maybe Dak is, I would say, the upper echelon. Maybe he's top 10 in the league. You know what? I won't hate on Dallas. I'll be honest. He probably is top 10 in the league. But there, that means that there's, you know, 8, 7, whatever better quarterbacks than him. And you've seen it with Brady that it necessarily is more important who's at QB than it is, you know, some of the other positions. Because, I mean, do you honestly believe that Dak wins a Super Bowl in this lifetime? I mean, that's like saying Will Harvey would win one. We all remember him,
well,
right? I mean, that's just not going
to
happen.
I don't know. And the reason that I say I don't know as opposed to just flat out no is because, yes, I think most of the time you need a legitimate quarterback to win a Super Bowl. And to take it a step further, the easiest way to win a Super Bowl is to win a Super Bowl with a good quarterback on a rookie contract. The moment that
and that's the Carson thing, too. You know what? That's what kills me about Carson is that if everything had gone to plan, right, we would have won that Super Bowl without having to go to Foles. We would have, I mean, that could, this could be what we longed for with the 08 Phillies. We should have won three, right? We won one, so we're happy. That Eagles team, you know, with Carson, we should have won more than one. Carson should have been at the helm for more than one. And it's just a shame, but you know what? In Philadelphia, we'll take the championships as we can get them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's not too many of them. Josh, appreciate the phone call. Thanks for checking in with us tonight. Have a great night. 610-632-0975. So I believe that if I were to go and rank the quarterbacks, Dak is definitely a top 10 quarterback. Now, Nat, you and I had this conversation, what was it, a week ago today when Dak Prescott signed the big deal. There are not 32 starting caliber quarterbacks in the world.
No.
There's 8 billion people on the planet. The NFL can't find 32 good quarterbacks to play the position. There are probably 20 to 24 starting quarterbacks. Because I think about teams like last year, like Washington, right? Outside of Alex Smith, I don't think Taylor Heineke's a starting quarterback. We'll get to that in their news in just a second because they signed a quarterback. You know, there are teams that are like I think Gardner Minshew stinks. Like, I don't know, I don't get the love for Gardner Minshew.
It's just the mustache people love.
But he stinks at football. They went 1-15 last year. They lost 15 consecutive games. Now, he didn't play in all of them because he was hurt, but he stunk. Mike Glennon stunk. The team stunk. It was one of the worst football teams I've ever seen. If you have the ability to win a Super Bowl with a franchise quarterback on his rookie deal, you have to take advantage of it. The Seahawks did it. They took advantage of Russell Wilson being a third-round pick and built one of the best defenses of all time, and Russ played really well. The Kansas City Chiefs did it because they had not signed Patrick Mahomes to that contract yet. The Patriots did it on the first couple. So I saw a meme the other day, and it said, Tom Brady constantly takes less money so the team could build. Other franchise quarterbacks take franchise quarterback money. Tom Brady wins Super Bowl. Other franchise quarterbacks, how does Tom Brady win so many Super Bowls? So that's true to an extent, right? Tom Brady does consistently take less salary cap money. Believe me, he's getting paid. It's just in different allocations with signing bonuses and things like that. But he does consistently take less salary cap money than the rest of the league seems to do.
That is like when, at least in the case of New England, I mean, hometown discounts only work if everybody does one.
Well, and with New England, there was always a formula. The first couple was they had the best defense in the league. The years they didn't win was the years they had the best offense, right? Tom Brady's best years. Randy Moss, Wes Welker, Gronk, they didn't win Super Bowls. And then at the end, they won a Super Bowl with having one of the best defenses in the league. Paying quarterbacks is a necessity. In order to keep your good quarterback, you have to pay them. You overpay often for good quarterbacks, and you overpay them to be great. Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. He's not great. Awesome, fantastic. He's none of that. He's not a franchise quarterback. He's not a star. He's a good quarterback. He got paid like a franchise quarterback. And it has hurt the Minnesota Vikings.
Correct!
Dak Prescott is substantially better than Kirk Cousins. So you have to find like a happy medium. You have to balance the scales between paying a quarterback that you believe can be franchise and then maximizing the rest of the team. Which is why I don't say, no, the Cowboys can't win a Super Bowl with Dak. Because I think they could. If they maximize the draft classes that they have, they build a better defense, which was historically bad at the beginning of the year last year. Eventually, they stop paying Ezekiel Elliott, which needs to be the game plan, and instead invest that money in CeeDee Lamb. The Cowboys could, in theory, win a Super Bowl. I don't think they're going to win one this year, but they could, in theory, win a Super Bowl.
They bolster that defense. They're going to be a threat for years to come.
Right, because I believe that Dak Prescott is, in fact, worth the money. You just have to kind of find that balance. It's a tough one to do. It's probably the hardest thing in sports to do is balance quarterback salaries and how much they hurt your cap. So, like, you pay... The only other position that when you pay, you overpay and fail makes the biggest impact is NHL goaltender. The Flyers were still paying Brizgalla for like years.
Not good.
Precisely. Not good.
I think they're actually still paying him to this day. I think this is the final year of that contract.
Sergei Bobrovsky's contract is looking not very great in Florida. But again, there's probably not 32 great goal. And we had this conversation. There's closer to 30 great goaltenders or 30 starting goaltenders than there are 32 caliber starting quarterbacks. But again, if you pay the wrong one, your team is in a bad spot. I think Dak Prescott's the right one. Because I look at the NFL draft, this upcoming NFL draft, with the understanding that Trevor Lawrence is the number one overall pick. I don't think that any of the quarterbacks coming out after Trevor Lawrence are better than Dak Prescott. I think that and my rankings go Lawrence, Lance, Fields, Wilson. But I don't believe that Lance, Fields, or Wilson are better than Dak Prescott. I think Trevor Lawrence can be, but he's going to be the number one overall pick. So the Cowboys have no shot unless they trade 17 picks.
Oh, and by the way, I just did more research. The Flyers are still stuck paying Briz until 2027. So the official contract is up, but because of the buyout, they still have to pay him for another 6 years.
That's not good. And in fact, that's what we would call really bad.
Not good.
Yeah, not good. 610-632-0975. Hey, by the way, a little bit of news. Not breaking, but a little bit of news. Both for the... pertains to the Eagles and the Philadelphia Flyers. Not directly, but a little bit of news. The Washington football team has reportedly signed veteran quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick to a one-year deal worth $10 million. So Washington, at least for this upcoming draft, I would assume is out of the quarterback sweepstakes because they signed Heinicke and now they just signed Fitzpatrick. I can't imagine they draft a quarterback in the first round, especially not at 18 or 19 or wherever they're at. So that's the first bit of news. Second bit of news, the Michigan Wolverines hockey team officially eliminated tonight from the Big Ten tournament. They lose to Minnesota, and that could be the end of a collegiate career for one player that we mentioned earlier in the show, one Cam York. So just a little bit of news and notes and things like that to discuss as we get later in the broadcast. Do you expect Cam York to become a professional at the end of this year?
No, I think AHL one full year.
Sorry. Not an NHL player, a professional. So with the understanding he's probably heading to the AHL.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So his collegiate career is over.
Yes. And I'm not the first one to believe, I'm not the first one to say that as well.
Ryan Fitzpatrick signs in Washington. You think that takes him out of the quarterback conversation for the first round of the draft?
Yeah. I am so on the fence with that one.
I think it does. I think because of the fact that they signed two quarterbacks this year, if they're bad again next year, then what? Well, not bad. They won the division. But if they get bad quarterback play again next year,
that's what's going to
determine. Then I would expect them to look into drafting a quarterback in 2022. Hey, by the way, we mentioned college hockey. My alma mater, Penn State, also out today in the Big Ten tournament. They fall to Wisconsin, so that sets up a Minnesota-Wisconsin Big Ten championship with an opportunity to go to the Frozen Four on the line. From college hockey to college basketball. One final reminder tonight is that the 97.5 The Fanatic Million Dollar Bracket Challenge is back, where perfection pays off. A perfect bracket could win you $1 million. Now you say, Tyler, that's impossible. I say, no, that's improbable. But you can do it. I have faith in you. So you enter a perfect bracket, you win $1 million. But if you don't do that and you find a way to not just beat your fellow Philadelphia sports fans and 97.5 The Fanatic sports fans, but also the likes of us here at 97.5 The Fanatic, I will be putting in a bracket on the bracket challenge. No, I can't win any money, but I just want to see how many of you can beat me. And you can maybe get bragging rights. But if you put in the best bracket, you win $1,000 and $1 million for a perfect bracket. So the 97.5 The Fanatic Million Dollar Bracket Challenge is brought to you by the Parks Casino Sportsbook app. The official sportsbook partner of the Real Philly Fan. Must be 21. Gambling problem. Call 1-800-GAMBLER. And just like that, Nat Marlowe, that leads us to about 11:45 here on 97.5 The Fanatic. And a little segment we like to do to wrap up the night called The Leftovers.
Oh, hello, hello, everybody.
What do you got for us tonight, Nat?
Well, Leftovers continues to go downhill as I take control of it once again. Let's start things off with the band getting back together down in Tampa Bay as Rob Gronkowski has signed a one-year deal worth $10 million with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, I kind of expected this, Nat, and not only Rob Gronkowski, but if we go back to the NFL free agent tracker, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have done a really good job in the first day of free agency and really have not spent a ton of money because not only do they re-sign Rob Gronkowski, but they get Chris Godwin back on the franchise tag, and they re-sign Shaquille Barrett to a four-year deal worth $72 million. Really not too bad. And by the way, Levante Davis signs a two-year $25 million. So you get four of your really impactful, important players for less money than I expected them to. A pretty good first 24 hours in free agency for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
And speaking of free agency, regarding Tom Brady's old team, the New England Patriots, I get this. We already talked about Jalen Mills signing with the Pats today. But also, another former Eagle, Nelson Agholor, has reached a two-year, $26 million deal with the Pats.
Yeah, so I guess the new rule is if you can't beat them, sign them. Because the New England Patriots seemingly signing everybody from the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl team. But the New England Patriots have been the big spender so far in the first 24 hours of free agency. So you mentioned those two names. They also signed former Baltimore Raven edge rusher Matt Judon for a four-year $56 million deal. Let's take a look at some of the other names. You mentioned Nelson Agholor. Cam Newton re-signs, by the way, on a very cheap team-friendly deal to bring back the quarterback for his first full season with the New England Patriots. Jalen Mills, of course, as you mentioned as well. And Kendrick Bourne, the wide receiver, signs a three-year $22 million deal. New England spent a lot of money over the last 24 or so hours. Let me ask you this. Free agency often does not dictate team success.
Otherwise, the Eagles wouldn't be contenders this year.
We saw it here in 2014, right, with the Dream Team. But this is not a bad compilation of players. I think that they've done really well for the fact that I don't necessarily buy into free agency. Could the Patriots be contenders in 2021?
I'll say no.
No because of the team or no because of the division that they play in?
Division they play in more so.
I believe that Buffalo is still the premier team in the AFC East.
Yes.
Miami is also coming off a 10-6 season. The New York Jets are terrible, and I believe that they will remain terrible no matter whom they draft in the with the number two overall pick.
Jets being the Jets.
But it's going to be a tough division to succeed in. That extra wild card team may give the Patriots an opportunity to compete, but I think that the Patriots are better today than they were yesterday,
even though
I don't necessarily like free agency.
Yeah, they're definitely going to be a better team, but I just don't see them being a contender.
What else we got?
Just don't see it. All right, well, we have a little bit of bad news. Six NCAA men's basketball tournament referees sent home after one test positive for COVID-19.
Yeah, I kind of expected something like this to happen. In fact, I'm surprised that we haven't heard about a team having issues just yet. I don't know if this is true or not. I suspect that the tournament probably has teams number 69 through 72 on standby in case any one of the teams can't make it to the tournament for COVID reasons. I kind of expected to have some sort of COVID positive tests in this 2021 NCAA tournament. My wishes and thoughts and prayers to the referee who did test positive, and hopefully that is the only positive test, and the contact tracing that returns from the other five referees return negative.
And in more college basketball news, Minnesota Golden Gophers fire men's basketball coach Richard Pitino after 8 seasons. His record with Minnesota was 54-96 in the regular season.
I kind of expected this to happen. Richard Pitino, not Rick Pitino, Richard, his son, becomes the third Big Ten coach to be fired, or let me rephrase that, not retained at the end of this season. The Big Ten, which now has 14 teams, is sending 9 teams to the NCAA tournament. That means there's only 5 Big Ten teams that are not going to the NCAA tournament. 3 of them are not returning their head coach for the 2022 season, Pitino being the third. Jim Ferry, who was the fill-in head coach, the word that I am looking for escapes me, the interim head coach for Penn State after Pat Chambers was fired, will not be retained as Penn State hired a new head coach today. And in order for me to not get his name wrong, I'm going to look it up. He was an assistant at Purdue. Purdue's Micah Shrewsbury will be the next head coach at Penn State. And then I believe Indiana also fired Archie Miller yesterday or today. So those are 3 of the 5 teams that will not retain their head coaches in the Big Ten. What else we got?
All right, last story. So the UFC will be running its first show in front of a full crowd in more than a year. So it's going to be Kamaru Usman, who will defend his UFC welterweight title in a rematch against Jorge Masvidal and the headliner of UFC 261 on April 24th in Jacksonville, Florida.
Is Pat Egan still here? Can he give us an update really quickly on this this fight? Because I am not a UFC fan. I will admit that. I don't watch the UFC. I will check in to see who the big names are, but I don't follow it enough. I am cautiously optimistic of the return of fans, because I think that's the bigger story. The fight will go on no matter if there were fans or not. I am cautiously optimistic. I believe that it is encouraging to see that COVID number cases have gone down and vaccination numbers have gone up substantially in the last 2 weeks or so. So I am I will remain cautiously optimistic about a full house, and still have some reservations, but hopefully things go okay.
It's amazing what the UFC has been able to pull off. I mean, Fight Island,
yeah.
The best concept imaginable to get through this entire thing. And actually put on sporting events like this in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah, so
terrific idea by Dana White.
I will check into the fight. I'm not somebody that buys pay-per-views for fights, because I don't believe that they are worth it, because I always have worries that a fight's going to end in like 9 seconds.
Mike Tyson style.
Exactly.
Why pay for a Mike Tyson fight ever?
That's always my concern about any primetime pay-per-view fight. But cautiously optimistic about the return of fans. And those, I would assume, are our leftovers for Monday night. Nat Marlowe, appreciate all your help in filling in on a little bit of short notice today. Appreciate you if you checked in on the phones or on Twitter. It was a lot of fun. Devon Givens will be back tomorrow for In the Post. And I believe he has the wraparound show tomorrow. So he'll be on from 6 until 7:50. And then back on after Sixers and New York for the In the Post segment of the postgame show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We will talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m. when the John Kincaid Show gets things going for Tuesday morning. I'm Tyler Zuli. We are here in the crease. Nat Marlowe, appreciate it once again. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Good night.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.